How you doing, Harm?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Excellent, thanks. Nice to catch up with you again. You know, our poll question this morning, we're asking our listeners and our followers on Twitter, what's the biggest question for you with the Vancouver Canucks for this upcoming season? And why don't we turn it over to you? You're with this team day in, day out under normal circumstances. What give me a sense of where you see things. So with this team, what's the biggest question for you?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for me just comes down to depth because we know that up front and even on the back end now, the Canucks have the type of top-end talent that few teams in Canada can quite honestly match. I mean, to have Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, Brock Besser, Bo Horvat leading the top six, you know that that group is going to produce for you offensively. On the back end, we know what Quinn Hughes can do, and now with the addition of Nate Schmidt, I really like the state of the top four. It's a lot better than it's been in past years, and you could make a case that it's probably the second best top four in Canada. Now, where you when you look outside of that scope is where some concerns start to surface, I think, because if you go back to the blue line, and I've made this point a number of times, is I'm sure the coaching staff is. They're going through the depth charts and they're saying, well, geez, if we go down a guy or two in the top four, who is stepping up in the lineup? Because right now, who's your number five D-man on the depth chart? Is it Jordy Benn, who was a healthy scratch for most of the second half of the season? Is it Ole Levi, who has one NHL game under his belt? And would those two, would you be comfortable with those two playing high leverage minutes in your top four? And so that's where I think the Canucks have exposure to injury risk because whether it's on the back end or even up front, their sort of fortunes are almost disproportionately weighted on the top end of their lineup. And so if you do lose a key guy, you do wonder if you have the horses behind them to step up and just kind of make up for their absence. So that would be my number one concern, especially in a condensed schedule where there's going to be a lot of three games in 4 nights. And for that reason, we know there could be durability concerns for some of these players.
Harm, do you agree with the mindset that Jim Benning seems to be espousing in the fact that condensed schedule going to be different? I agree, and most do, with the depth concern, and he's looking at it as opportunity. And even though he may very well have some Michael Ferland money to play with, that he feels it's going to be a year that let's give some guys a chance to find out what we have, and then we can spend some money in the summertime. If that indeed is his mindset, do you agree with it?
Yeah, I do think that's his mindset. And I think part of it is when you look at the Canucks, is the way they approached this offseason, they were fairly conservative as far as their actual cash commitments. You look at a lot of the contracts they dished out, whether they were for RFAs, even UFAs like Braden Holtby, they seem to backload the cash commitments to year two as much as possible. And I think part of that is because obviously you're anticipating that a 2022 NHL season would allow for fans to go back and revenues would therefore normalize. And so for that reason, I don't think the Canucks, I think they made a conscious decision to sort of look at this year as a transition one where, as you mentioned, they're going to look to play some of the young guys. The stakes maybe aren't as high as they are as they were. Would have been originally from a business standpoint. So I think they're taking the same approach from an actual competitive on-ice perspective. And so because of that, there is, I believe, the fortunes of this club is in large part going to depend on the second wave of young talent and whether it's guys like Ole Levi and Jack Rathbone and Brogan Rafferty on the blue line or whether it's up front. The continued development of the likes of Adam Gaudette, of Jake Virtanen, of Zach McEwen. A lot of these names are going to be the X factors because, look, you know what you're going to get from the Elias Pettersons, the Bo Horvats, the Brock Bessers, the JT Millers, more or less. Same thing on the back end. You know what you're going to get more or less from Quinn Hughes, Nate Schmidt, Alex Edler, Tyler Myers. It's about, okay, how are those other pieces going to fit in? And so those are going to be, along with obviously extraneous factors like health, in my opinion, the young guys are going to be the biggest determinants in establishing just how successful the Canucks can be this coming season.
Harmon Dale with us here on Sportsnet 650. What can we expect from Brock Besser in your mind?
I think we can expect to bounce back, honestly. I don't know if we're going to see him. I genuinely believe so. And I don't necessarily know how, like, you may not see him ever return to, like, I go back and think to that rookie season that he had where he was guns a-blazing near the top of the NHL leaderboard in terms of goals. I don't know if we're ever going to see that version of Brock Besser again, but I do think that we're going to see better than he showed this past year. It's the first season that he shot below 10%, and I know there are some concerns about, okay, is that does that have something to do about the velocity of his shot, and while that may be true to some extent, I think just given his career track record, he's due for some positive regression in that department. Now that Tyler Toffoli is no longer with the club, he's going to be back on power play one as that right shot. So you know he's going to get those opportunities. And really, I think the key for me is if he gets a shot to play with Pettersson and Miller again, I just, the way that line clicked last year, it was one of the best in the NHL. And really, the way I look at Besser is, I watched him in the playoffs too, and the way that he was able to create space using his skating was a lot better than I'd seen in midseason. And I think he's realized the importance of, you know, he's never going to be a quick guy. He's never going to be someone who carries the puck to the neutral zone. But I think he realizes now the importance of just having that separation, the first step in the offensive zone, just to create some time and space to actually unleash his shot. So I think with that in mind too, I think we could see a modest step forward here for Besser.
I'm not concerned about Brock, and I think, you know, 649 line would be the smart way to play it. But Harm, after that, in a shortened condensed season, does the leash have to be long? Do you think Jake Virtanen sits in that second right wing position with the top six? And I know the organization wants it to happen, but can you wait for it to happen 10, 12 games in where it's the hit and miss Jake Virtanen? And if that's the case, do I dare say that Louis Erickson might be next up there for a while until they find something?
Yeah, honestly, the leash can't be very long with Jake Virtanen, or frankly, any player in this season. I mean, you've only got 56 games as your runway, and if you dig yourself an early hole, man, it's going to be really hard to fight against gravity and get back into the playoff fight. And I know that the coaching staff recognizes this. The club and organization knows that a strong start is going to be the key, and especially if you look back at Vancouver's history under Travis Green. They have this history of, you look at the last three regular seasons, they get off to a very hot October. You look at the bubble, they just seem to hit the ground running really well. And over the course of the season, they can kind of fizzle out and sort of reverse to the mean a little bit. But they're one of the best, the most prepared teams, and just seem to exceed expectations early. And I think that's going to be the key again for them into this shortened season. And so when you look at Jake Virtanen and his possible spot in the top six, I'm sure the organization has communicated to him that, look, this is the best top six opportunity you're going to get in your career, but you're going to, like, this isn't just going to be yours for an extended stretch. Like, you're going to have to put the work in. You're going to have to give the results. And look, if he doesn't show the level of two-way detail and defensive commitment necessary to be trusted in those high leverage minutes, then you are, I think, going to see the coaching staff turn to old reliable, which is Louis Erickson in the top six, he would be an option, because you look at some of the other right wing candidates. I mean, the other options aren't very enticing either. I mean, you probably don't want to shift Adam Gaudette from his natural position down the middle. I think you want to do everything possible to make it work from down the middle. I mean, you've got newcomer Jace Howrella could be an outside candidate, and there are other options too, but just none of them seem to stand out, and that's where, if things don't work right away, you may see the organization look to even the trade market. That's what the club has done in two consecutive seasons, right? They've made a mid-season acquisition for a top six forward last year for Tyler Toffoli, the year prior for Tanner Pearson. And if things don't work out for Jake Virtanen, I really wouldn't be surprised if they try to explore that path again closer to this coming year's trade deadline.
When do you get a sense of what the outlook looks like? Jim Benning kind of alluded to it a couple of weeks ago that, you know, Michael Ferland won't be ready to go for the start of the season. Is that pretty much a write-off for the year, or is there going to be continued hope with that?
Yeah, really good question on that. Is the way I see it, we've seen Ferland stop and start so many times, and in the nature of the injury he has, and all the history of the concussions that he does, it's a very frightening thing. And so with that in mind, looking at Ferland and the entire scope of the situation, I think it is, you have to go as slow as you need on this one. In my opinion, there's no sense trying to rush a mid-season sort of return. And look, I'm no medical expert, but especially for a guy who has missed as much time as Ferland has now, I think he needs a training camp. If he is ever going to come back, and I don't know if that's possible, but if he is, I do think that he needs a full training camp to get back up to speed. The last thing you want is for him to sort of gear up for a comeback and then get into game action and realize, okay, like, I am not ready for this. And that's where, I mean, Ferland himself has talked about a lot of times the vestibular issues that come with the concussion symptoms, and how, you know, when you first come back to play, even when it's at training camp, it just feels like the speed and the pace of the play is so high. And I remember talking to Sven Berchi. He went through similar concussion issues, and he said the same thing. So I really think the speed of the game for a guy that's been on the sidelines for so long would be a concern. So to me, from my eyes, again, I'm not a medical expert. If he's not ready to partake in training camp, then I'd be very wary of any sort of mid-season type return. I think if you are going to be planning and plotting for him to eventually return, you have to take this as slow as possible, take every precaution and make sure, because look, practices, you just can't replicate game speed. And I know that training camp is kind of similar. Ideally, you'd want a proper training camp and preseason to allow him to get back up to speed. So that's kind of how I'd approach things. So the way I see it, if you're a Canucks fan, you're probably not seeing Michael Ferland anytime soon.
Yeah, it just seems like it's pointing that way. And I think the one thing that everyone has said throughout this episode, even in the last year, is you just want Michael Ferland, the husband, to be okay, father, and make sure he's healthy. Harm, thanks for this. At least we know they're dropping the puck, and it is going to be exciting. And, man, we can sit here and predict all the storylines. I think it's the unpredictable that we know is going to happen as soon as they start with injuries, with everything that's taken place. But it'll be fascinating, and a good fascinating, because I think there's more positive than negatives with this Canucks team as we look forward to the 2021 season.
Absolutely.
Happy holidays.
Thanks.